We're joined now by Dr. Dan Dyker, who is president of the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs and a leading expert on Middle East diplomacy. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with the meeting last night. Do you believe that the Trump-Netanyahu meeting genuinely advanced the Abraham Accords, or was it more of a symbolic gesture?
Paula, hi, how are you? Just one small correction. I'm the president of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs.
I actually have that written down. I read it wrong. Sorry.
But that's fine. I just want to make sure that our listeners have the right name. Look, the question about the Abraham Accord and the expansion, we have to be very clear about a very important difference between the moral and strategic imagination of what could be and what exists on the ground. And this difference is what defines, on the one hand, the shared perspective of President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. At the same time, and I would say ironically, it defines the difference between the two men. Mm-hmm. Because Netanyahu is definitely Mr. Security. Notwithstanding the total security collapse on October the 7th, Prime Minister Netanyahu has restored his reputation as Mr. Security, clearly with the recent success on destroying much of Iran's nuclear, ballistic, and other sensitive sites, and his earlier 2024 destruction of the Hamas, Hezbollah leadership, and his success also against the Houthis, and clearly the Iranian. The notion that, you know, what could be in the Middle East is really has to be taken with a grain of salt. And on the one hand, you know, President Trump has been an extraordinary ally and has a great vision for the Middle East that we saw a month and a half ago with his history making trip to the Gulf. But at the end of the day, Israel must have defensible borders to the south, to the north, and from the east. And right now, the issue with Hamas and a potential deal is there potentially, but there are a lot of security issues that have to be answered that are not answered yet. And this is what Netanyahu is demanding, that Hamas either be expelled or destroyed and will not be a poisonous, destructive, genocidal neighbor anymore to the Jewish people in their very small nation state.
Dan, there are reports of direct U.S.-mediated talks between Israel and Syria. Can you walk us through what might actually be on the table and what Israel would demand in return?
Well, that's a very important and very difficult question, and it's exactly the question that Netanyahu and Minister Dermer and the whole Israeli team are asking themselves. Because on the one hand, you know, you have President Trump, who has relieved the new Syrian leadership of these crippling sanctions with all sorts of promises of potential normalization with Israel. On the other hand, there is chaos going on under this new leadership, with a lot of minorities being imprisoned and tortured and arrested. We've seen, everyone that has WhatsApp and YouTube sees exactly what's going on in Syria. There, and Israel is approaching the Syrian file with great caution. Let's remember, Mr. al-Shara comes from al-Qaeda and ISIS. He does not come from the European Union, nor does he come from the government of South Africa. So there are a lot of unanswered questions regarding a potential relationship to Syria that have yet to be answered. At the same time, we must say that Prime Minister Netanyahu is doing an excellent diplomatic job at following the lead of President Trump. He is working with President Trump to align himself with President Trump. And I think that reflects the very serious coordination and strategic and tactical security alignment between the two countries. But my point to you is, at the end of the day, Israel is approaching everything in the Middle East, Gaza, Syria, Lebanon, Iran, Yemen, from the point of view of maximum security and minimum risk, especially after October the 7th.
Well, I wanted to ask you about Lebanon because Lebanon and Hezbollah remain deeply entwined. Could Lebanon really be part of a normalization process, or is that a long shot?
Lebanon could definitely be part of the normalization. I mean, we in Prime Minister Aoun, we have someone, Israel has someone it can work with. There's no question about it. What's the problem? The problem is that Hezbollah still has substantial political clout in the country, both formal clout in the parliament and informal clout in southern and central Lebanon. They still have weapons. They still have influence. And so we're not there yet. But clearly in Mr. Aoun, in Yosef Aoun, there is someone who wants to take control of Lebanon and make it a normalized state. And they realize the importance of Israel, Israeli security assistance, technology, and what the Middle East could be and what they could play a part. But we're far away from that still. That's what I'm trying to introduce in this particular interview, is a dose of reality.
Can I just stay away from that reality for one more question? Because Indonesia has been floated yes. as a possible new Abraham Accords partner. Now, what would that mean? Or what would it mean for Israel to gain traction with a major Muslim country outside the Arab world?
Well, clearly Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world. And I can tell you personally that I have been in touch in very small, intimate settings with major religious figures from Indonesia that command the respect of up to 200 million Muslims in that country. So there is a possibility. Indonesia has also been tapped and mentioned, Paula, as a potential address for a number, or many hundreds of thousands of Gazans who would choose to leave Gaza. The vast majority of Gazans want to leave Gaza and start a better life. And Indonesia has been pointed and noted as a possible destination. So there is that dynamic of joining the Abraham Accords and becoming a destination for many, many Gazans who would choose to leave.
And then just going back to your point of looking at all of this with a grain of salt, if we zoom out, do you think we could be or we are entering a new era in Middle East diplomacy? Or is this just clever PR while conflicts still simmer beneath the surface?
Let's start with your second question first. The Middle East has always been a region awash in intra-Arab conflict. We know that from the fall of the Ottoman Empire at the end of the 19th century, the emergence of pan-Arabism and Arab nationalism. It has always been a region that has been inflamed, that is defined by conflict and then resolution, temporary resolution, and additional conflict between tribes, families and clans in the Arab world, having nothing to do with Israel. Now it continues to be that, and I think that we would be well cautioned to stay away from grandiose peace plans and visions of messianic peace, especially when Israel is involved, because this is the region that we are dealing with. So what we have is a region that has hills and valleys. And they don't recognize the concept of ceasefires. They have something called Hudna. And people know that Hudna means temporary cessation of hostilities before rearming, resupplying, and then continuing in what is a win-lose culture. That's what it is. So Israel and our friends must embrace those that would like to embrace us, and we will fight those that choose to dehumanize and demonize and try to destroy us. That is the reality of the Middle East. And so we, on the one hand, we hold out hope and we say, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker, the eternity of Israel does not lie. On the other hand, we must be realistic and stop dreaming about messianic Western notions of peace in a region that does not have that in its DNA.
That certainly sounds like sensible advice. Dr. Dan Dyker, the president of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, thanks so much for joining us once again here on The Home Run.